And you were talking about the epidemic of disconnection that we face now, with people really having hard time to connect with others on deeper levels and to understand themselves. So the disconnection is also from themselves. What's your take on this?
There's a level of like you needing to have some kind of comfort and connection and intimacy with self in order to branch out and connect with other people. And vice versa, like when we connect with other people that love us and can reflect back to us who we are, that makes us feel more connected to ourselves, because we're, you know, very social creatures at the end of the day.
What contributes to it is that like we spend most of our time in our heads or other people's heads, being overstimulated with content like social media, like books, news, oversaturated with information. So it's hard for us to maybe discern what we're thinking, what we're feeling, because we are swimming in the sea of other people's opinions and emotions.
Our technology is evolving faster than our emotional intelligence. And it's really cool, right? But it's evolving faster than our like moral gauge or our self-awareness.
Welcome to Humanly, podcast about the extraordinary ideas and ordinary people. Stories that we tell ourselves to make sense of the world around us. Isn't that precisely what makes us human? My name is Paula and I'm a Renaissance soul. I'm passionate about concepts, but most importantly, how they evolve when shared with other people. You'll hear about what I learn daily through books, people, experiences, in a series of solo episodes and interviews. Welcome on board. Glad to have you here.
Welcome to the newest episode of Humanly. Today, we'll be diving into the topic that has been overlooked, and I feel like it deserves a place in a public discussion. We have been connected through our devices more than ever, thanks to growing technology, but it seems that with that, our sense of connectedness to other people is going down, with the skyrocketing rates of suicide, depression. And I think it's really important for us to dive into the root cause of it, to give people tools to understand how to identify their emotions, emotional landscape, how to process them in a healthy way. I'm really excited to welcome my guest, Kim, who's a holistic licensed psychotherapist who specializes in somatic and mindfulness-based modalities, trauma healing. Her area of focus also include LGBTQ+ and highly sensitive and empathetic folks. And she's also a public speaker, workshop leader, sound healing facilitator, and neuro-emotional techniques certified practitioner. Kim, I'm so excited to have you here. How are you doing today?
Hi, Paula. I'm so excited to be here with you and talk about this fun stuff. I'm doing really great. I'm really excited.
Ever since I came across you and we had a conversation, I knew you'd be the perfect person. Plus also your TED talk that I watched on emotions. And I was mind blown like by the topic and by your individual approach to it, heart that you wear on your sleeve when it comes to like talking about the topic. So I'm really grateful for this time today. Before we dive in into the conversation, let's go for a little icebreaker. And since we'll be talking about emotional intelligence, I'd be curious to know, what's the emotion that you are most comfortable with, and what's the one that you are least comfortable with?
I love this question. Most comfortable with. I think that might be, I don't know if empathy is an emotion. That might not be an emotion. But maybe something along the lines of like kindness. And I'm like, wait, is that an emotion? Or probably something that's categorized as pleasant would be something I'm like the most comfortable with, especially being socialized female and most uncomfortable. I think anything having to, like anything in the category of what I would feel like is a confrontational emotion, like anger, just like not liking something, an emotion that I know requires me to like speak my truth or voice a boundary, like those tend to be more uncomfortable. And that's been a big area of where I've healed and grown, is around like boundaries and being able to just get out of my mouth, like, actually, no, that's not okay with me.
this polarization of emotions that we've been taught that some emotions are acceptable and good and some emotions are bad. So I think this conditioning just made us believe so. And that's why it's hard for us to actually dive in and to recognize both. So I'm glad you mentioned this. So this would be a great segue to talk about maybe a bigger picture of emotional intelligence now, because I think you coined this phrase when we talked last time, when we were trying to outline this conversation. You were talking about the epidemic of disconnection that we face now, with people really having a hard time to connect with others on deeper levels and to understand themselves. So the disconnection is also from themselves. What's your take on this? Why did we find ourselves in this place?
There's like layers to it, right? There's a level of like you needing to have some kind of comfort and connection and intimacy with self in order to branch out and connect with other people, and vice versa. Like you're when we connect with other people that love us and can reflect back to us who we are, that makes us feel more connected to ourselves, because we're, you know, very social creatures at the end of the day. But when you were saying that, what popped into my mind first is kind of like the United States of America, what that was kind of founded on around individualism, and how that sort of created this culture of isolation and like it's all about me and I have to do it all on my own. And I know for me, I was talking to one of my friends about this the other day, but we were like, I just want to live on a huge property, have my own little yurt, live with all my cool friends, and like grow my own food and just live in community with people again, because we've really gotten away with that in this super individualistic society. And I think that, I know for me, and I think for a lot of other people, that makes us really lonely, because we're physically disconnected from everyone. And like everything you buy, you have to go to this place and buy stuff for yourself. There's no, like, there isn't much of a communal aspect to living anymore. And it's not really easy. Like, you have to go out of your way and plan stuff and drive far and pay for gas and fit into your schedule just to see other people and connect with other people. Like, it's almost like a luxury to get to connect with other people and do things to connect with yourself.
That's really great element of this societal programming of US is very individualistic. So it's all based on you and your success. And I feel like we also fetishize productivity. We merchandise anything we do on a daily basis. Connection with other people, you cannot really monetize it. You cannot merchandise it. So like, I feel some people reach this realization, like, you know what, it would be nice to hang out, but you know what, doesn't bring me money, it doesn't bring me success, it doesn't move the needle forward. So that's kind of worrying, that we started to look at friendships and connection as something, you know, that doesn't build on top of our like career plan, you know.
I know, totally. And then it leaves a lot of us really depressed and anxious and sad because we're disconnected. So it's not like that makes us more productive or more successful in the long run.
Exactly. It's ironic because actually, even when you think about like productivity and creativity, so I mean, that's also my focus of interest. So they say that you need an empty mind, you need boredom, you need to invite boredom for your mind to be able to process things and be actually more creative and more productive. So I feel like having this empty spaces where we actually connect with people, connect with nature, connect with yourself. So this adds up. This actually enhances your living experience. What role do friendships or close relationships play in my life? Because I feel like we are much more guarded nowadays because we don't know how to deal with rejection. We live in a society of fast reward. There was a term that someone coined that is called like relational consumerism. Like when you look at dating app, access of it, availability is so high and you have bigger choices, but like the quality of it and the depth that we go with others and with ourselves is completely different stories. So why are we here? Like what drives us to actually self-isolation? Why are we so scared of like going deeper with others and trying to nurture these relationships?
You know what? I noticed something. I know like you're Polish and you've lived abroad, and it's so like living abroad gives you such a massive insight into your own upbringing and how other cultures view reality. and relate to one another and people in their community. And I remember when I was, I lived in India for 6 months. I think I got back when I was like 21. And I remember like very soon after I got back and I arrived back in America, like people were physically farther apart. Like in India, like I remember, my brother just sent me this picture the other day of these three guys that were walking on the street in front of a construction site, like grown ass men walking, linking pinkies. And I was just like, holy shit, you would never see that in America unless you were in the Castro or somewhere that it was implied that you were gay, right? Like there isn't like male intimacy is not something that American men are taught or feel safe with, generally speaking. So I just noticed people were physically farther apart. People were not paying attention to the humans around them. Everyone was staring at their phone. And the other thing I noticed was it was almost like this aura around our country. It was like looking into people's eyes, they looked so sad. It was something that I didn't see before. And I think being out of it and away from it for 6 months and coming back into it gave me this perspective of like, whoa, people look so full of shame and sadness and like hopelessness and heaviness. And it was really striking. Like it was almost like I was looking into similar eyes in every human being that was just like on the street, around, walking around, going to events. Like there was this heaviness and it was really shocking. Well, I feel like at least with Western culture, we have such a epidemic culturally of feeling like I'm not enough. I'm different and special and that I'm not enough. Like there's this self-obsession. It's that individualism, that egocentrism, that I have to do it all my own and get everything on my own. And it's all mine when I have it. Like that's very isolating. And also it contributes to this. I think it really, we're more of a shame-based culture in a lot of ways. And that makes you not really want to go out and connect with people. That makes connecting with people a lot more scary if you don't feel safe to be who you are and express authentically. We're also not a super duper community-oriented culture. I think in cultures where it's more community-oriented and you do things together as a community and it's more connected to like the earth, the environment, to your neighbors, to people that are around you, you just inherently feel like you feel safer with people. So probably don't feel a need to self-isolate or kind of pull away from people to feel okay.
No, that's a really great point, especially about like different cultures. So you're right. But like maybe when you're traveling, you have new pair of lenses and you're kind of forced to evaluate like, okay, how was I brought up? How was I raised? And like, how can I cross correct to make sure that I consciously nurture habits that actually serve me? But it's also interesting. I also watched the other day this documentary about factors that favor longevity and actually living in community and feeling that you are part of something bigger than yourself, that you can have some sort of service to the community. That's what gives you purpose. So I think we are kind of acting against our instincts, like trying to self-isolate.
Yes, that's so well said. I totally agree with that. Like on a biological level, we're going kind of against harmony with how we're designed as humans and as animals.
So this bears the question, technological advancements that we see nowadays. I mean, it's mind-blowing with artificial intelligence. It seems like we're progressing. We're coming up with new languages. But then we forget this more inherent and visceral language that we possess, which is feelings and emotion literacy. What are emotions? What are feeling? Because if you could talk about what feelings are or are not, because I feel like we confuse and we self-identify with whatever we're feeling.
I was thinking about this the other day when I was driving into San Francisco over the Bay Bridge. And like you start seeing the huge ads for tech companies and stuff. And there was this billboard that just said, AI is looking for a spot on your team at work or something like that. It was like an advertisement for AI or something. I don't know. And then there's the huge, just so many iPhone ads. I don't know why there's so many, but there are. And I was thinking like, our technology is evolving faster than our emotional intelligence. And it's really cool, right? But it's evolving faster than our like moral gauge or our self-awareness. And I feel like that, like technology, us focusing on evolving technology faster than we're evolving our self-awareness, our capacity for mindfulness, our own human being, like that's really what's gonna, I feel like the most helpful distinction as that is that like feelings, emotions, I kind of use the same word interchangeably, but essentially they always occur as physical sensations in our body. And the creator of nonviolent communication, Marshall Rosenberg, I believe, but he talks about feelings as being indicators of needs. For example, like if I feel thirsty, that's indicating that I have a need to drink water. Or a more complex one would be like I'm feeling really frustrated and irritated and afraid because this person is kind of yelling at me and moving closer to me. That fear and frustration is signaling to me that maybe I need to voice a boundary, I need to move my body, I need to do something. Feelings, I like to think of them as data points. Like they signal to us what needs attention within us, whether that's a physical feeling like I'm hungry or I'm cold, or a feeling like I feel moved to express my love to someone, or I feel like I need to set a boundary, or it could even be, you know, I'm like a trigger, for example, that is a feeling, but it can kind of guide us back to where we have unresolved trauma. Maybe there's a place in us we need to heal. So that can happen when, for example, someone, you know, is like, hey, do you want, I got you ice cream and I got you strawberry. And we like lose our shit and we get really mad. Like that kind of, when we have a reaction that's not proportional to the situation, that can be a signal to us that there's some kind of unresolved trauma there that needs our attention. And it can take a minute, you know, to decipher between what's my trauma, what's my trigger, and what's actually my authentic boundary or like the feeling that's needing my attention. But that's just a practice and there's tools for that too. But yeah, I like to think about feelings as they're points of information that need our attention. It's our brilliant human system signaling to us that something needs our attention within us.
That's a great intelligence that we possess, but we abandon it by looking outward. So I feel like it just makes this disconnection even bigger, this gap even bigger. We spend most of our time in our heads or other people's heads, being overstimulated with content like social media, like books, news, oversaturated with information. So it's hard for us to maybe discern what we're thinking, what we're feeling, because we're swimming in the sea of other people's opinions and emotions. Let's imagine that like we're talking about someone who's been disconnected from themselves for years. So what are the small steps we can take to try to learn from the scratch, you know, because it doesn't come naturally.
Oh, and a lot of us are in that boat where we're like, I haven't felt anything for 43 years. I don't know how to do this. It can be a lot to begin to open that gate. Kind of slowly into the pace of your nervous system and what your nervous system can handle. But a helpful thing I like to kind of look at is reminding ourselves that feelings aren't our stories about stuff. So if you find yourself going into story and like, oh, well, they shouldn't have done this. I'm really pissed at them for murmur. Like, it's okay to let yourself, you know, go into a story and get it all out. But a really helpful tool that, and this is, I kind of take this from mindfulness-based practices and also internal family systems therapy. Instead of saying, they really pissed me off with what they just said, kind of a way to reframe that is, I'm noticing that there's a part of me that's really triggered by what they just said. And I'm going to get curious about that part and see what's up with that part. So a really helpful thing to do is kind of look at it as like feelings are an experience you're having. They're not all of who you are. They do not define who you are. They're not your core essence. They are very important and we need to pay attention to them or else they accumulate all kinds of stuff in our bodies and our psyches, but they aren't who we are. So I kind of think about it like it's a part of me. So you have this really intense emotion and you can recognize, okay, there's a part of me that I have this tightness in my chest and I'm breathing heavier, and naming it, like naming what you're noticing in your body, super helpful and grounding. And also as a way for us to give that feeling attention so that it can begin to resolve and dissolve on a physiological level. And also just the simple reframe of there's a part of me that's feeling this way. And I'm going to get curious about that part of me and where it's coming from and why it's feeling this way. Maybe even ask, like, what does this feeling need to say, express, do, giving it voice to express itself? And I like to think about it too, as we're kind of taking the orientation of being an unconditionally loving parent towards our own feelings, towards our own experience. So we're not going into, I got to fix it and figure it out and logicify it to death. It's like you're just sitting back and practicing mindfulness and getting curious about what's here. And that's really hard. That's a really challenging practice, especially if you don't have like a meditation or mindfulness practice yet. So really, in essence, this is like a mindfulness practice. It's like a self-compassion and a mindfulness practice.
I love this. I can relate to it, especially the part about self-identifying. Everyone has a different emotional landscape. Some people are, you know, I feel like it has maybe something to do also with sensitivity, how sensitive you are to your environment. So this environment can trigger certain emotions. So I have been on this side of spectrum of high sensitivity. So I've been always like drowning in different emotions, but my relationship to them wasn't very much structured. Anytime that I would slip into the bad emotion, quotes, air quotes, I would just feel identify with it. And I would feel like, okay, so it's wrong, you know, I would like guilt trip myself for feeling it. So I feel like the first step to creating some sense of isolation from it, these are transient waves that come into your vision and go. I realizing that is huge breakthrough in the journey of actually working with your emotions. What you said about like feeling in your body, that's interesting actually, because don't pay attention to our bodies at all. They might be aching. We're sitting at the desk for hours and hours on end.
We're not breathing. And like you said, like a lot of us live up here. And that's part of the problem, is we're not feeling into the rest of our body. And like feelings, they always have a physical component. There's always something we can identify in what we're feeling in our body. And that's really grounding and helpful to kind of give it that attention and to kind of understand how it's impacting us physiologically.
I would go even as far, like, of course, there are different movements and theories. I think I came across a theory that like some emotion, like very like strong emotions of grief, that it can accumulate in certain organs in your body and actually manifest as a disease. Our body's intelligence is way, way higher than we give it credit for. What actually happens when we repress these feelings, when we, you know, when we're completely disconnected also from our physical plane? So what happens then?
I love this question. This is what led me. Yeah, exactly. And this is my personal reason that led me to this work. I didn't want to feel. I didn't like feeling. I was sprinting in the opposite direction for a lot of my life. And I had no idea that that's what I was doing. What I've noticed and what I've heard a lot of people also notice is that if you get so good at suppressing, kind of spiritually bypassing or logic bypassing, trying to fix away, denying your feelings, which also feelings like in that category is denying your needs, denying your boundaries, it will manifest in your body. And this is very much like Louise Hay talked about this. She put together over her life, just through observing and working with thousands of people, like the people would come in, have a physical complaint. And she observed over decades, thousands and thousands of people that she saw and consistently saw the same emotional issues with different physical ailments. I just think that is the coolest thing ever and something I very much resonate with. So I got really, really sick when I was a teenager, and it was also at the absolute height of me suppressing my emotions and just not knowing how to deal with them. And I love to ask people this, like, what happens to you? Like, why have this conversation? Like, what's at stake here for you personally, whoever the you is, you listening? Like, what happens to you when you say yes, but there's that little part of you that really just wanted to say no? Like, how does that impact you? In your body, in your nervous system, your sleep for the rest of your life, your relationships. Like those little moments can have huge impacts. So I hope this is okay, but I want to ask you, Paola, like, what do you notice? Like if you suppress your feelings or push them away or, and there's a lot of ways that we fail to kind of feel our feelings effectively. So we can suppress them, push them away, try to explain them away, numb them out with drugs and alcohol or scrolling. We can blame other people for and outside circumstances for everything we're feeling. That's kind of another sneaky way we fail to like really feel our feelings and own them. So for you, like, what do you notice? What's the impact in your life when you find that you've like been suppressing or denying your feelings?
That's a great question. So for me, I cannot really suppress them. They're too intense. So for me, it's like just pretending they're not there. So usually what I would do, I would just enter my mind, head. I'll just stay in my head forever. So try to be productive, because I think also Eastern European culture is all about like, if it's not hard, it's not earned. So like for you to kind of appreciate who you are is through your doing. Reward is only for hard work. So I feel like whenever I feel vulnerable, emotionally vulnerable, I tend to throw myself in more work or things that will get me, you know, get attention of other people, so status, and just kind of escape from it, because emotional vulnerability is weakness. That's something that has been conditioned for me, like when I was a child, and that it's shameful to actually show this vulnerability, that it's something that we have to deal with yourself, but no one tells us like what are the tools and how to deal with it. So we don't. So in my body, I just feel like all the stress accumulates here, like in my neck, and I can just feel like a really tight grip here, you know, so to the extent that I would wake up in the morning and I can't move my head, maybe, or I just really feel very anxious, kind of like a living hell. Like I pretend nothing's going on, but everything is going on, and it just accumulates like a snowball. I've been actually looking into this myself for like years now, so I'm able to talk about this. But if we had this conversation like 4 years prior, I'd be like, I'm good. I'm good. Everything's perfect. You know, I'm happy all the time. There needs to be a moment in your life where you feel maybe nudged towards it. And sometimes a nudge can be a really strong push, because maybe like you go into overdrive, like, so your body is completely like, you know what? It's a hard stop for you. And that's actually sad and unfortunate, because it might take a longer while for you to actually go back to this like level of self-regulation. A lot of it now we hear about setting boundaries, like how to protect your energy and how to nurture relationships that are like respectful, because you just mentioned that we might be triggered by other people. How can we enforce these boundaries without damaging our relationships? Also without losing compassion, because I feel like with everything in life, we try to kind of like push the concept to its limits, saying that now it's my boundary. I'll just enforce them anyway I please, without thinking about people's feelings, because it's me. I'm doing me. So just accept it, take it or leave it. So I feel like we again going to this very extremism position here. So how can we strike balance?
That's an excellent question, conversation. And I love that you said self-regulation, because that is such a huge aspect of being able to not only experience your own feelings and be present with them and be able to tolerate them, but also to be able to express your feelings to other people, because that shit's really vulnerable. Or like if someone comes up to you and is like, hey, I really need to talk to you about something that happened. Like, we need to talk, you know, like your ability to self-regulate when someone's sharing their feelings, that's also a really important part of being able to really hear someone and create that connection and intimacy with them. I think it's something to not, I think, I know and observe it on the regular, that people who are empathic and kind and highly sensitive have this worry that like, actually saw this TikTok the other day of this woman, and it had like, you know, tens of thousands of views or likes. And all she was saying was, you setting a boundary is not aggressive. You setting a boundary is not aggressive. Like, you saying what you want is not inherently aggressive. And I think for a lot of people that were probably wounded as kids, when we tried to like, we were just being our little kid selves and someone was like, hey, stop it. You're bothering me, or, you know, whatever happened. Like, we can really internalize me expressing myself, my joy, my yes, my no. Like, that'll get me scolded. That'll get me rejected. That'll have someone give me the silent treatment for 2 days, you know? So we can have a lot of charge around that. But I think it's important to remember that when we're true to ourselves and we're able to really honor and respect, this is what's okay with me, this is what I want right now, this is what I don't want right now, and kind of voice that in a kind way to other people, like, not only is that really kind to give them accurate information about who we are, where we're at, how to interact with us, And it helps them take care of themselves and do what they need to do to take care of themselves. But it's also setting an example of this is what it can look like to like safely and compassionately say what I'm actually feeling. And a great book I love, I recommend this to a lot of people, is Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg. I hope I'm remembering his name right. But it's basically learning how to say that, like scripted out, how the F do I say this? Because most of us weren't taught, right? It's like we're taught to suppress our emotions and just not have them. But also we're absolutely not taught how to compassionately communicate our needs. And a lot of us have trauma and a lot of dysregulation and fear around it because of the responses we got. I highly recommend checking out that guy's work. He's brilliant. I might invite like one of the partners instead of saying to their partner, like, you really piss me off when you talk to me like that. You know, like having them say, I'm noticing there's a part of me that gets really triggered when you refer to me as impatient. And like, I'm open to exploring that part of me. And maybe it's that, you know, they have a little bit of trigger that has nothing to do with their partner, but maybe it's that the way their partner is communicating to them and the energy they're giving off actually doesn't work for them and they don't want it to happen anymore and they can communicate that. But, yeah, it's tricky. Like it's super tricky to communicate this stuff. But kind of a formula that I get out of my mouth a lot is friends have told me I say this a lot, but I'll say like, I notice I'm feeling and then fill in the blank. So not you're making me feel, that's like the opposite of how to communicate kind of like in terms of nonviolent communication, but saying like, you know what, I'm noticing I'm getting, my nervous system's getting really hyperactive right now. And I think I need to take a couple minutes, leave the room and figure out, you know, get grounded, figure out what I'm feeling and then come back and continue this conversation. That would be one example of how to like self-regulate, how to state what you need. And it's all about you. It's not about the other person. Like what we're feeling is about us and how we're responding to stimuli around us. So remembering that too, is super helpful. Like I am feeling blank. I feel blank when you blank. Not like it's your fault that I am really sad today, you know, because nobody likes to be blamed for stuff. Like that triggers most people. That upsets most people and puts them on the defensive and out of a place of compassion and listening. So like us being able to take responsibility for how we're feeling is kind of a great step that really, like it allows us to really practice that self-responsibility, but also voice what we need and what we like and what we don't like and what we want and what we're feeling.
Ah, I love this. I feel like we were on the same frequency. So I'm like, yes, I want to dive in more and more and more. Especially the thing you said about nonviolent communication, because when we are in this stress and this like high emotional reactivity, so that's when we want to point a finger, you know, just to kind of like take this hot potato and pass it on someone else.
Exactly. Yeah. Discharge that energy, right?
When we start like that, so then like we risk triggering other person and basically then missing a point of why we're angry. So I think it just takes practice. So before you maybe have this conversation, scripts help instead of like come up something on the spot and risking having this reactivity. You can rely on something solid, but also maybe you preparing your nervous system, right? Like trying to meditate, going on a walk. So like discharging this high intense emotion so that when you come back to a conversation, you're ready. Talk about it and kind of reverse engineer. It's especially difficult for people pleasers, trying to bend ourselves forward, acting against our needs. And then out of the blue, I mean, it snowballs. So at some point we'll feel like, you know, our cup is empty. It's dry. Like, I mean, we will communicate our needs at some point, but it will come completely out of the blue. And it might be really a shock to the system, to the other person, because we'll be so disproportionate to whatever situation we were facing. So I feel like early signaling, learning like to talk about the small things that trigger, so we build the understanding, is really helpful. And to also go deeper, that you learn how to talk with other person about your emotions, about things that you're not proud of. also what I learned through my experimentation, I feel like it's the best way to speed up your process, like to observe like how you react. So one of the things I noticed, like for myself, that for me, it's really hard, like when someone's being vulnerable with me and, you know, sharing that, oh, they're really feeling really like sad. My automatic response is to jump in and fix it. So I think it's extremely hard to be conscious of it and just hold space for someone without trying to fix it and impose like a solution.
I love that. And I feel like it's such a gift, like in the moment, if you're having a conversation with like a friend or your partner and you notice, you start to notice, and this is where that mindfulness practice comes in so handy. You start to notice like, oh man, I really want to like give them a solution, or like, oh, they should totally read this book, or like, oh, I have a podcast they have to listen to. Like, instead of doing that, like, and you can even say this, like, this is part of practicing being vulnerable and practicing communication. You could say like, hey, I'm noticing a tendency, like I'm noticing that I really want to help you figure this out and like fix this because I hate to see you suffer. Do you want me to help you come up with solutions right now? Or do you just need to vent and have me like love you while you vent? I ask that to my friends all the time. I have my friends ask that to me all the time. And I ask that to my clients sometimes too. I'm like, are you venting, or would you like me to kind of like guide you in a certain direction here? And like, that is such a beautiful question to receive, you know? And then that gives that person choice to like check in and be like, oh yeah, you know what? I actually kind of know what I need to do. I just really need to get this all out and hear myself process first. Like, but it also is like you practicing that ability to notice when you start to be like, oh, I really want to help them fix this. And like, basically, and you can be honest, just be like, hey, I want to help you fix it. But if you don't want that, you know, let me know. But I think that's so important. I wish we learned that with like how to have a friendship 101 in kindergarten.
Yes. I mean, come on. That should be part of curriculum. Like, you know, how our life quality would be enhanced on just having it like as like, yeah, body memory, or like, you know, something really that comes on autopilot without us like overthinking. Okay. How do we hold this conversation? So this is helpful just to be. Yeah. So instead of like thinking all these things and having all these doubts in our heads, if we actually vocalize it, it just makes things clear so that, you know, it doesn't snowball and into something.
Totally. Yeah. So much clearer. Yeah. And it builds that connection and that intimacy because you're really communicating and practicing like consent with how do you want me to show up for you right now? And like, I'll do this with some of my friends. I'll call them and be like, hey, I just really need to like vent. I don't need you to like figure anything out. Like, do you have space to hear me just like verbally process something? And me asking my friend too, like now I'm not just calling them and dumping on them without their permission, but like that gives them choice to be like, you know what? I actually don't have capacity to like hear that right now, but how about later? Or, you know, or they're like, yeah, totally go for it. So kind of like just asking for that consent is such like a basic part of communicating, but also we're so not taught it.
And that's what we learn the hard way. We really get curious and inquisitive about like how we're responding. So that's what I noticed too, that for me, it's so hard to say no to someone who's in need because I'm really highly empathetic person. And in the past, what would happen, I'd just like take in anyone who needs my help. And then I'll grow resentful because I'm like, oh, can't they feel? Can't they see? This is too much for one person to bear. So now I'm just learning, you know, okay, to vocalize it. And, you know, it's surprisingly like people who have this emotional intelligence or like emotional capacity to understand like your point of view, like they actually react in a good way. Like, you know what? Sure. Like, I'm so appreciative of you actually being there for me. I know it's not the right time. So it's sometimes we assume things without even seeing how it will play out in real life, right? So we just have to try and see.
Yeah, exactly. And if you voice a need like, you know what, I really don't have capacity for that right now, or I really don't have time in my schedule for that today. I'm so sorry. And that person blows up, like calls you selfish, you know, like how they respond also informs, gives you information about like, do I want, like, how close do I want to be with this person? Does it feel safe to be with this person, you know, in a friendship or relationship or business relationship or whatever? But when we like really show up fully and authentically and vulnerably and like voice what we need, like the other person's response also gives us information about who they are and where they're at and what they kind of have the capacity to relate to us as well.
And we can be there I mean, the nudge they need. So once they see you can actually communicate in this vulnerable way, the initial reaction might be this, them lashing and trying to blame, because it's like maybe they're on the autopilot and they're still early in their journey. But that might be a turning point for them to understand, oh, maybe I need to rethink my ways. Like, why am I so triggered by it? Like, hopefully for everyone, there's a different timing. So the other thing I'm curious about is that, because again, we like to, like, when there's some trends, so now there's a trend of like everyone's going for therapy and some concepts are being misinterpreted or taken to the extreme. So like, I feel like there's lots of entitlement about expressing your feelings, expressing your emotions. And sometimes people actually justify their poor behavior by saying, I'm just setting a boundary, or I'm just expressing my authentic side.
Exactly. I'm just expressing how I'm feeling. Yeah. You yelling at someone or you blaming someone else for how you're feeling is not you expressing your feelings. Like, that's you having a tantrum. And yeah, it very much like irks me when I see that end of the spectrum. And of course, we're all learning and growing. We're all trying to figure this stuff out. Most of us weren't taught how to like responsibly express our feelings. So it can take a while to like recalibrate and figure how to actually do this. But yeah, it's super important to note blaming other people for how you're feeling, yelling at other people, you know, like everything in that vein of blaming others for your experience, that's, you've gone out, you have fallen out of like effectively feeling your own feelings and also fallen out of taking responsibility for your experience and also like compassionately communicating.
And we just need to be compassionate towards each other, because everyone's just like fighting the fight we're not aware of. Thinking about my experience, that the trigger. So I love what you said about your body giving you data points when something happens, like seemingly regular situation, and then it really trips you off. So that's an indicator of like, and you want to have a reaction and you feel it's justified. Like deep inside, you might even feel it's justified. So I think it's important to kind of, that's why, like, to get into the habit of observing and taking note of your how you're feeling and what trips you off. So I actually started a journal, like, where I daily actually put all the triggers, the things that happened to me, because this helps you understand your patterning. Because if you're like knee deep in it, it's really hard to catch yourself in the act. But like in retrospect, if I sit down, like, you know, in the evening and I feel like, okay, what happened today? Like, how did I feel? Take some discipline to do this. And sometimes you're not in the mood, but I feel like it just speeds up your recovery. What are the other techniques you would recommend, how to feel our feelings and how to use them in a constructive manner to help ourselves understand why we're triggered?
Well, one of the things that's really helpful is kind of recognizing like your body always knows. And I've done kind of a lot of this work with women, particularly who've been sexually assaulted or have complex trauma around being sexually assaulted. And it can happen, like, for example, like this happens to us women, like generally speaking, so much. For example, you're walking through the grocery store and you go to grab some pickles. And some guy comes up to you and it's like, oh, I was just about to grab the same pickles. And he like puts his hand on your shoulder and like does something just a little creepy, you know, and then leaves. Like these subtle little moments where it's like, ugh, like we feel violated, not respected. Like these, I can't even tell you how many countless moments like that have occurred in my lifetime. And like those tiny little moments, like that can be what contributes to complex trauma as well and really have an impact on our nervous system that a lot of people, I think a lot of us don't realize, and just kind of contribute to this general feeling of not really feeling safe or not feeling okay or not feeling enough the way that we are. But like remembering that our body always knows, like getting, like I love your journaling practice, and I'd be curious too to know, like, what are your particular personal signals that your body tells you when you're off. Like for me, my breath gets really shallow and tight, or like you voiced kind of that tension in your shoulders. Like our body starts to talk to us. When we ignore our feelings for a long enough time, disease starts to happen in our body, but our body starts to get louder and louder with these signals of like, hey, like pay attention to the signals we're trying to give you. Like we're trying to give you information and you're like judging it and ignoring it and pushing it away, essentially. So kind of getting really intimate with yourself on like, what is the tiniest no that I feel in my body? Like when is that first tiny moment when I become a no to something? And a lot of the time, especially as women, especially as people pleasers, we tend to override that. We get really good at overriding that. And that's when we can also kind of accidentally, unintentionally re-experience things that are traumatic because we've gotten so good based on our conditioning and societal upbringing on how to ignore that no, how to discount that no. But that no is super subtle and it happens in your body. So getting really clear on what that looks like for you personally. Like what are your signals of when you first start to feel a feeling, a particular feeling, what is it like? What is the quietest, tiny little thing you can feel when that feeling first starts? And kind of getting intimate with that experience with yourself. That's like such a huge tool. And bringing your attention into your body that always brings you into the here and now. So it's another great way to practice mindfulness because your physical sensations in your body are always and only ever happening right now. Your mind can go into future, past, make up a whole bunch of shit that's not real. But if you focus on your breath or like rub your legs and feel that feeling, it's happening right now. So that can be a really nice way to like ground back into the present moment, practice that mindfulness, kind of get out of your head into your body.
No, that was great, especially about like identifying when the boundary is with your no. And yeah, there's so many factors that play the role in it. So you mentioned that the physical aspect, the emotional aspect, and the external aspect. So I feel like times when you're overcome by the emotion, it's really hard to just take a step back and have this observer point of view. So what you just mentioned about trying to ground yourself first, it just takes practice and consistency, and it just helps to get help. So I think that's a great segue to maybe talk about your work as a therapist, like what are the modalities that you use or what are the embodiment modalities that you would recommend for someone starting out and, you know, getting curious about actually tackling this beast?
Well, my approach to therapy is very much like an empowering approach. So I very much see myself as like, I am your guide kind of on your journey inward. So I really see an excellent therapist as kind of guiding you home to your own inner truth and your own answers as opposed to like coming in with a bunch of advice. So that's really the approach I take is like guiding people home to who they really are, to healing, to integration, to their own inner wisdom. Because I really believe that like each one of us has all the answers and the healing we're seeking right inside of us. And while that is very much like what I believe, I also know it can be really hard to access that inner healing, especially if we have trauma and unresolved stuff. Like it's, you know, we have our own blind spots with ourselves. So having like a skilled professional kind of guide you home to that inner wisdom is super helpful. And I'd like to do a lot of parts work, like internal family systems therapy, a lot of mindfulness-based stuff, a lot of somatic-based stuff. And also talking about how colonization, patriarchy, individualism, capitalism, how all of these systems impact our sense of self and our self-worth. Like that's a huge, important piece to me that I know is not always, it's not every therapist's jam, but to me, that's super an important part to talk about. So I'm definitely a safe space to kind of dive into and deconstruct a lot of that kind of stuff when it comes to our identity and particularly our self-worth.
There are lots of different ways to approach that. And I love what you mentioned about like having an outsider, someone who can actually guide you to your blind spots, because when you're too deep in your experience, it's hard for you to be objective and so we can come to these conclusions faster, having someone's back. So I'll definitely share in the show notes, like where my listeners can find you, because I'm sure after this conversation, people get curious. So I'll attach your information there. I feel like it might be overwhelming to see like the variety of therapy modalities you can jump into. It's a very vulnerable place to be. So like when I was personally interested in like internal family systems, but that's when you maybe dive deeper into the relations, like not even immediate relations with your like parents and grandparents, but even like maybe previous generations. So it's a lot to carry. So I feel like for someone who's starting out, maybe it's just enough to focus on basics, what you just mentioned, like learn to discern what your body's telling you, like how this emotion manifested itself in the body, like after the trigger. So starting with basics and building this confidence to work with therapists is also a way to go. Like that was for me, like, you know, again, 4 years ago, I wouldn't even consider working with a stranger because it felt too vulnerable. It felt too personal, you know, just because therapists are like doctors or like dentists. Like it's not like the first one you land is someone that, you know, would necessarily you'd vibe with. So it may take a while.
Yeah. And it's okay. Like it doesn't have to turn into another thing that we shit ourselves about, which is also very like Western culture. Like I have to do this right. And I have to be super vulnerable now and be really brave all the time. And it's like just noticing up there's my mind's tendency to go into trying to do this right and like be good at this. And, you know, just kind of bringing mindfulness to that tendency too. Cause I think that's also something we tend to do. And like you mentioned earlier, that productivity, like how do I be the most authentic and like productive and like excel at being authentic and like get kind of getting into that same, like, I'm not basically that mindset coming from, I'm not good enough as I am now, but it's like, no, like we can sit back and have some self-compassion and even have compassion for that part of me that is still super terrified of being totally vulnerable at work. And like, that's okay. Like we can go as fast as our slowest part and kind of go at a safe pace for our nervous system.
Tend to go into extremism. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be super authentic. And we have like Gen Z, like, yeah, these are my vibes. These are not my vibes. Like I applaud that, you know, but I feel like we can reserve that only for people that earn our trust. So we.
Yeah. And like recognizing too, like there's a, like, oh, there's a part of me that's coming up that's self-critical, or there's a part of me that's coming up that really wants to control stuff. And it gives you that degree of separation and recognizing again, you aren't like a controlling person, but there's this part of you that's probably scared that comes up and really wants to control stuff. And can you get curious about that part? Like, where is it coming from? Does it need anything from you to feel a little bit more okay right now? You know, so kind of using that also like recognition of these, there's these different parts of us that come up and they aren't like who we are and they don't define who we are. I feel like that really helps us like separate our ego from like who we actually are.
When we want to control things, like control even our healing, that's where we get it wrong because we try to operate from our mind and not from our body. Take a step back and think about, okay, that's just emotional wave. It's just transient state. It's come and goes. And it's here to teach me something, to remind me that there's still part of me that is struggling with something. So I think this compassion and awareness, all these like different puzzle pieces that we yet need to make sense of. That's been great, Kim. Amazing conversation. We've covered quite a lot. So I think I just hope the only intention I had for this episode for people to actually get curious and start asking questions, because that's when the healing starts and when you start this self-questioning. As a final, maybe like closing note, I have one question for you. So if you could go back in time and, you know, meet your teenage self who's still struggling, so what's one piece of advice that you would give to her?
I love that question. This is something I've like done a lot in my own like therapy and healing practice. But I think the general theme would be just looking her in the eyes and telling her, like, I know you don't believe this, but you are actually perfect exactly the way that you are. And it's safe to be exactly who you are. You're lovable exactly the way that you are. You're deserving of everything you want, like right now, from the place of who you are right now. You're enough. Like if I could somehow transmit to that version of myself that she is enough right now, I feel like that, you know, that would make everything different.
Thank you so much, Kim. I really love this. I really love this. I learned a lot and I will be sharing more details on your work so that my listeners can reach out and have a look at your offering. Thank you so much. And I hope we have this conversation sometime soon. Who knows?
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This is super fun. I love talking with you.
Thank you so much. And I'll see you next episode. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. Hopefully something piqued your interest in today's episode and maybe stirred a bit of flow in your life. If you wanted to share your experiences or simply say hi, feel free to send me a message via email, humanly.space@gmail.com, or just drop by to my Instagram account, humanly.space, that I'll be sharing in my show notes. Keep flowing. See you in next episode.